Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, April 5th, 2021. So happy spring. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and we do place the meeting audio on our website for all of our AAC, BRS, and MAS meetings. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can mute or unmute yourself by pressing star six. If you would like to make some comments, you can virtually raise or lower your hands by pressing star nine. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute and or unmute yourselves. If you'd like to raise your virtual hands, towards the bottom, you would see reactions. If you click on that, you would see a raise hand icon like that. And you can click on that to raise or lower your virtual hands. Excuse me. We do have interpreters on the call with us. I would request everyone to please state your name first before making your comments. It helps them do their job though. It helps everyone listening on the phone calls knowing who's the speaker. It also helps everyone listening on to the listening the audio of the meeting knowing who is the speaker. And this also allows one speaker at a time. So I thank you in advance for taking your turns. I would go ahead and take the roll call of the committee members at this time. So please confirm your presence. Elver Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabria.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Vanessa is on the call with us.
I'm present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Present. I'm here.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here. Sorry.
Thank you. Melanie Jackson.
Here.
Thank you. Steve Kaplan.
Present.
Thank you. Mary Kay McMahon.
Here.
Thank you. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg.
Anthony's here, but he's working on the chat.
Okay, thank you. Phil Posner.
I'm here also.
Yes. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. Ms. Rush is on the call with us.
Present.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. Paul Samaford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here. And Anu, could I ask also that presenters articulate any visual portions of their presentations for the visually impaired folks?
Yes, they will.
And thank you.
Thank you. Kelly yes. Samino. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's AAC meeting. At this point, I would go ahead and read the agenda out loud for the record. We just went through the roll call of the AAC members. I would go ahead and share the agenda on my screen so that everyone is able to view they can. So bear with me for a quick moment. At 5:35, we will have approval of agenda, approval of prior meeting minutes and the board report by Dr. Posner. We will have our general manager with us today. He might be a little delayed because of other commitments. As he joins, He will be sharing his comments. We do have some old business, and Mr. Christian Blake will give us an update on that. We have our team to give us information about the 8000 series rail car, and they will be presenting the information followed by questions and answers for the members. Approximately 7 o'clock, we will have public comment section, followed by the bus and rail subcommittee report. Afterwards, we will have the Metro Access subcommittee report, and the meeting will adjourn at 7:30. At this point, I will stop sharing my screen.
Thank you. And the only thing to add, we do have a very busy meeting, and so we may invoke the timer at some point to make sure that we don't run behind, but we'll try to have as good a discussion as possible. For the approval of the agenda, hearing no objections to the current agenda because it's flexible, I'll take it as being approved. And then for the approval of the prior minutes, hopefully everyone has had an opportunity to look at the minutes, and if there are any additions, subtractions, or changes that you would like, let's hear it now. Hearing no objections or suggestions, we'll take the prior minutes of being unanimously approved. And the board report, you should have all had a copy of the written board report, and hopefully you've had an opportunity to see the verbal board report that is currently on YouTube that I gave last Thursday. And happy to take any suggestions for additions, subtractions, or changes to the board report. I modified some of the requests about the news item on the 8000 series car because we dealt with that in the verbal report last Thursday, and we have guests from the 8000 series development team here tonight. So I sort of shortened what was originally requested. But right now, I'm happy to take any suggestions, additions, deletions. Hearing nothing, I'll take the board report as approved, as written. So we're ready for Vice President Blake to update us on old business.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is going to be very brief in line of what you're saying, Mr. Chairman, and I'm making this comment only for the record. It's old business, but it's only for the record primarily tonight because we did run out of time during the March AAC meeting. But I just had, and I wanted to say something, but I just have to say this for the record. And that's the only reason we're doing this, not for debate or confrontation. But there was a public comment made, and I'm paraphrasing at this stage, that a member of the public rightfully concerned, but felt that this was the first time in reference to Metro bringing in independent consultants to assist us with digital accessibility and accessibility of our website, that we could not believe that this was the first time Metro would actually bring somebody in to help. And I didn't have the time, but we have to make it on the record that this is not the first time Metro has brought independent accessibility specialists to come in and support our efforts at improving digital accessibility, and the improvements we've made, I have to say for the record, speak for themselves. But I had to say that back in 2016, Metro did bring in, as many of you may or may not remember, the Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind, and one of the consultants, they had three consultants working, and one of the consultants, a former member, became a member of the AAC following his efforts, named Larry Hale. He didn't stay on very long with the AAC. He later took a job at Boston Metro Public Transportation Authority doing similar accessibility work. But he was a member of the AAC for a short period of time. And so I just wanted to state for the record, this effort that we have now underway, and we're going to have a special meeting later this month, is in fact not the first time Metro has reached out. But as we've pointed out, we've made a lot of improvements in the website, and just like, and I have to just use one personal example. In the case of the NAACP, which I'm a member of, and we don't say that the NAACP speaks for all Black people in all circumstances, I'm not one to say that the Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind speaks for everybody with visual disabilities, but when a CLB contractor and an expert in accessibility gives us advice and tells us that improvements have been made and that assessment is backed up by computer software testing, well, I, as a person without the visual disability, have no reason not to believe when they give me that assessment. However, as we've done, when we hear from people in the public, including one strong advocate on digital accessibility, that doesn't mean we just rest on our laurels with what CLB told us 4 years ago, but we continue to strive to make improvements in digital accessibility and other aspects of accessibility based on the current feedback we receive. So we want to just put for the record that this was not the first time Metro has reached out to independent sources to help us improve digital accessibility. And also that even with those independent sources, even with computer software that tells us or gives us data to say improvements have been made, we're going to continue our commitment to listening to the public and to members of the AAC as we strive to improve digital accessibility even further. But I wanted to clarify that we didn't have time at the end of the March AAC meeting, so I just needed to get that on the record for this meeting so that it would be part of the record.
Thank you
for your time.
Super. I have one quick question for you.
Yes,
Mr. Schaefer has retired. Yes, do we have an interim ombudsman yet?
Well, the interim ombudsman in terms of official complaints, concerns, is really myself and or Carol Lopez. And really, it's officially Carol in the sense that she's the director of the ADAP office as I was prior. But we are actively recruiting for the position. You'll see a position posted very, very shortly. And we anticipate filling that role relatively soon. I mean, that's our goal.
Yeah, that's super.
But yeah, as you know,
I just want to make sure the public knew who to send the email to. And so it should go to Anu and she will forward it to either Carol or to you.
That, and if you go on the website, because you know on the website, we have David listed as the official ombudsman. And what we're going to do, instead of putting that as vacant or two different names, what we've done is that number is still very much active and will respond to any official accessibility related complaints. And as you know, Mr. Chairman, as I was about to say, you know, my personal cell, in a sense, even though it's transfer, is a very public number, and customers don't find challenges finding my number. But officially, yes, Carol Lopez or myself, or even as you mentioned, Anu, we're all going to fill in David's ombudsman shoes until we actually officially replace him.
That sounds super. Thank you so much. So we're going to move on to the 8000 series car. And Mr. Divise, I really want to thank you for coming this evening. You spent a lot of time with us while the contract was being bid and the original thoughts went out, and you promised you would come back once the contract was let. And there is no space under your shoes. I mean, the contract was announced last week and you're here. So thank you very much, and let me turn the floor over to you and your group.
Okay, thank you, Chairman, and thank you for inviting us, and we're more than happy to participate in your committee, and I hope as we'll continue to do so and give you an update and keep our communication open. As one of our primary stakeholders, we value your input into the design and delivery of the 8000 series car. So we look forward to working with you and the committee. I have prepared a presentation for the committee today. I'll go through it. I'll try to enumerate the slides as well as describe and read through the slides as well. I presume the standard protocol is to wait till the end of the slides to have questions, but I'm open to entertaining questions. I know if that's the process, just let me know.
No, I think it's easier to go through the presentation. The only thing, if it's a very complicated slide, I might break in and ask you to be a little bit more for our vision challenged folks. But otherwise, you know, just the floor is yours.
Okay, I welcome the interruption if I need to describe anything. So I'll start now. Again, my name is Nahom Devasai. I'm the project manager for the 8000 series railcar project. I have Jun Deng, assistant project manager with us today as well. We report to the vehicle program office in charge of large capital vehicle related projects. And we report to the chief engineer, Sachit Kakkar. He was not able to join us today, but he would normally is available to participate or answer questions when the time comes. So I have pulled up the first slide. Let me know if everybody can and or see the slides, and also if everybody can hear me as well. I would appreciate that.
I don't see the screen being shared at this moment. Am I missing something?
Okay. I'm in the process.
Oh, there we go. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay.
I am novice to Zoom. I usually use Microsoft Teams, so I'm learning through the process. So
we can see your screen and we can hear you quite well.
Okay, thank you so much. So I'm displaying slide one, which is basically the title page. It reads the 8000 series passenger rail car simulators and related supplies and services is the title of the slide, and also is the title of the project and the contract itself. So everybody knows, if you hear that, we're basically describing the project in its totality. I'm going to slide two, which basically gives a project background. I'm sure everybody knows. The purpose of this project is basically to replace the existing leg. Yes.
I apologize for interrupting, but your slide has not moved.
Oh, okay. I have multiple screens. There you go.
There we go.
Okay, now I know which screen to operate. Okay, slide two is basically the background of the project. As everybody knows, the purpose of the procurement of the 8000 series rail cars is to replace the 2000 and 3000 series rail cars. And they were originally purchased and delivered between 1983 and 1988. So these cars have kind of come to the end of their life. So the 8000 series will replace this fleet in its totality. So I'll read the slide quickly so everybody kind of understand the language that's written on the slide. The project consists of the design, manufacturing, and delivery of the rail cars that will meet the demands and match the infrastructure of Ramada. The 8000 series rail cars will replace all 358 remaining 2000 and 3000 series rail cars. The 2000 and 3000 series rail cars were purchased, as I stated, in the 1980s. I'm going to transition to slide three, which basically gives a quick synopsis of the Metro fleet history, starting from the 1000 series rail cars to the currently being purchased 8000 series rail cars. I have a picture on the slide that depicts the 7000 series rail cars as well. As you know, the 1000 series rail cars, the 4000 and the 5000 have been retired, so they're no longer in service. We do have the 2000, 3000, 6000, and now the 7000 series in service. The 8000 series rail cars, which are being procured by a company called Hitachi Rail, we are anticipating their delivery around 2025. And once that's complete, at least as of today, we'll be getting 256 rail cars. And that doesn't necessarily replace all the 2000 and 3000 series rail cars. But at some point in the future, Ramada will exercise additional options to meet the replacement of all the 2000 and 3000 series rail cars. So I have a table here basically that kind of depicts all the fleets by who manufactured them, the year of service they were delivered, and the quantity of cars. So let me know if I need to explain this into any further detail.
One question on the 256 cars, are they double cars like the 7000 series? So that's 2,256 double cars or 2,056 single cars in a double pair?
No, so what we do normally is we count by cars. So each car is considered as one. So it's 256 individual cars. And obviously if you look deep into that, there is an A car, a B car, which are two cars. When you have double A and B, then you have their quads. So here is just individual cars we're counting.
Great, thank you.
Yep. All right, so I'm transitioning to slide number 4, which describes the scope of the project. As I mentioned before, the 8000 series rail car project is basically the design, build, and delivery of the 8000 series rail cars. There are additional services and products that accompany the rail cars to include simulators that primarily is used for training our operators. There are spare parts requirement as well to support the maintenance of the rail cars initially. There are also additional rail cars options. If Ramada decides to exercise all options, in reality, we're able to purchase 800 rail cars. And there's also an optional vendor managed inventories, basically to assist Ramada in facilitating the purchase of spare parts for the life of the cars. Obviously, this has not been completely looked at yet, but that option is in the contract if we decide to exercise in the future. There's also other additional services included, like extended warranty and so forth within the contract itself. Currently, the base order cars, as we call them, basically the initial purchase is for 256 rail cars. That contract was awarded late last year, and there was a brief period of negotiation with the contractor. And finally, a notice to proceed was issued on March 1st. And I would also like to say we had officially had our kickoff meeting with the contractor in March. So the project has started, just to mention. Option one, option two are for additional 104 rail cars each. Option three, there is 120 rail cars. And option four is for the VMI, which we call vendor managed inventory. Option five is for the extended warranties, which the additional services I mentioned. So all the contract services are optioned within the contract to identify and exercise them when the time comes. There is additional unspecified options, which if we decide to procure all the amount of cars that we're allowed, we are able to do that, but there are unspecified options that we have to modify the contract to facilitate that process. So again, the contract would allow us to buy up to 800 rail cars. I'm going to transition to the next slide. This slide basically kind of depicts the project milestone, as we call them. These are not the only milestones, but these are the most important milestones. I'll just narrate through them, and I'll explain what they are. The first milestone is the project kickoff, which we recently had. That's our first sit down with the car builder. And we went through the process of kind of starting that first communication with them. The next milestone is the mobilization, which the phase we're in now. The car builder would basically try to acquire all the resources that they need in order to facilitate the project. that period kind of lasts between 2 to 3 months. But in that process also, we're engaging the car builder, we're clarifying questions and going through the technical specifications. So it's a very fluid time, but nothing, it's final. There is no concrete detail or engineering work being done yet. The next phase is the conceptual design phase. That's the phase where high level car designs are being submitted and reviewed. And obviously when that period comes, there will be an engagement with stakeholders, including the AAC. After the conceptual design, there is a preliminary design, which is a little more detailed design process. And then there is a final design. Basically, that's when we kind of affirm our final approval on the design of the cars. And that's approximately 2 to 2.5 years from now. But this schedule is not finalized yet. So probably by next meeting, we'll have a little bit more descriptive and final schedule to share with the AAC. After the final design review, there is a first article inspection where we are engaged with the car builder in the process of inspecting facilities, inspecting subsystems and their construction. When that's complete and the car builder finally gets the go ahead, they will start the manufacturing and the building of the pilot cars. And those pilot cars will go through a series of tests before they're finally approved. And at that point is where the car builder is gonna get the final go ahead to start building the what we call series production car, so the production of all the cars that have been ordered. The pilot car design and qualification and testing period is a long period, but there is plenty of opportunity for stakeholders to participate in reviewing the mock-ups. There will be numerous mock-ups for the cab, for interior of the car. So we're gonna engage the committee throughout this process as well. And I'll just skip through the rest. There's training, manual delivery, special tools, self-test equipment that they're required to deliver is mostly to support the maintenance of the cars. And when all said and done, they're gonna be a final delivery of the rail cars and final acceptance if all the warranties and stuff are flushed out and the cars are reliable. Then the final acceptance basically concludes the project. But I presume this is going to be 10 to 12 years out from now. It's a long process. Okay, I will transition to the next slide. This slide. Nice. Okay, this is slide number 6. Briefly describes the delivery schedule. We are anticipating the pilot cars, which are the first 4 cars to be delivered around March 2024. And there's going to be a 6-month period of testing. And then we're going to get the first production cars, which are the second 4 set of cars around September of 2024. And those cars, in conjunction with the first pilot cars, they're going to go through a series of testing. That basically, since now we have 8 cars, the 8 car sets are gonna go through a different series of testing to prep them for revenue. And that's another 5 to 6 month period as well. When all said and done, we anticipate accepting those sets of pilot cars and first production cars by March 2024. At that point, those cars most probably will enter revenue service and will also start getting delivery of the series production cars after March. So we're anticipating between April and May, there'll be about 16 cars a month we're going to get, just the same way the 7,000 series cars were being delivered. It would be the same process for most part with slight adjustment. And by August 2026, we anticipate receiving all 256 8,000 series rail cars, and the hope is they'll be in service by then. All right, I will transition to the next slide. Slide number 7 is basically There you go. It's basically a graph depiction of what I went through starting from today, March 2021. There was notice to proceed. Our first squad or the first pilot cars are being delivered in March 2024. The second four sets of cars are being delivered in September 2024, and then production cars will start being delivered on March 2025. And by August 2026 or late July, the completion of the base order deliveries. All right, I'm gonna transition to slide number 8. This slide kind of basically highlights our approach to the project very briefly. High level description. So the program merely is going to focus on safety, reliability of the fleets, quality of the rail cars, delivery schedule, and post-delivery warranty. I'm sorry?
The page has not been...
Oh, okay. Thank you, June. Slight delay. Okay, here we go. So again, I'll repeat that one. So the program is primarily focused on safety, reliability of the fleets, quality of the rail cars, delivery schedule, obviously to make sure we're getting these cars at the right time in order to facilitate the exchange of the current fleets that are gonna be within their time span to be removed out of service. So that's very critical. And then post-delivery to support the warranty and spare parts. So we wanna make sure not only are we getting new cars, but we wanna make sure also we're getting all the support we need in order to make sure the cars are running reliably with all the required parts and maintenance support. Also, the 8000 series will have some customer amenities that kind of new to Ramada or improved, let me say. There is obviously advanced passenger information system that's been required as part of this contract. So as you may know, even though the 7000 series rail cars are new to us, the design process took place 10 years ago. So from technology standpoint, they're pretty outdated. So our hope is the 8000 series rail cars will bridge that gap in bringing the technology to current times. And also there's additional passenger amenities that we're requesting to include power outlets for charging cell phones and computers. There's going to be self-adjusting automatic interior LED lights within the rail cars. Also going to have a dynamic system map. So this is quite different from what we have now, which is a paper map. So now we're transitioning more into an electronic map that could be updated, and it's going to be more interactive. So passenger can know where they are within the system as a whole, instead of just the stations. And there's gonna be also a Wi-Fi system that's gonna be accessible to passengers. So these are some of the few highlights that the 8000 series rail cars would include. From our internal process, there are some improvements also we're looking into. I think that the GM, the last couple of years have challenged many departments, including us, into the 3% challenge contribution. So we have incorporated some technological advancement into our technical requirements. A few of them are dual terminal operation, which basically allow Ramada, when trains are idled or sitting at the terminal stations, door could be closed partially or at certain points. So that still have to be worked out, but that option and availability will be there in order to kind of maintain the interior climate and also save energy, obviously. There's also gonna be a power reduction function within the rail cars, where basically when they're at the yard, they can kind of power themselves down to a minimum requirement so energy can be used efficiently. Also, weight management. As you know, the heavier the cars, the more energy they use. So we're making a significant effort to make sure the rail cars are lighter than what we currently have. All right, I'm gonna transition to slide number 9. And I apologize if I'm going slower, please push me to go faster. The next slide are very brief. So slide number 10 kind of just has a picture of a Wi-Fi onboard system. And obviously this has been requested in many, many occasions from different part of the ridership, from ridership. And the GM has instructed us to kind of incorporate this into the upcoming procurement. And we did, so the 8000 series so cars will have passenger Wi-Fi on board. Slide number 11 is a picture of basically depicts cybersecurity. It's not a lot of description or wording here, but I'll describe it briefly for the committee. The 8K would be technologically advanced rail cars in comparison to what we have now. So there is a lot of concern with cybersecurity. So we have created a robust cybersecurity requirement to protect the rail cars and also to protect passengers. So we are doing that in conjunction with our IT cybersecurity department and also our third-party consultants. So there is a big effort to make sure cybersecurity is in the forefront. Slide number 12 kind of just shows the conceptual imagery of the 8000 series rail cars. Please be mindful, this is at early stage, so it's very unlikely the rail cars would look like this, but this is just our best effort to kind of create an image to share with the public. But there are a few things that are very prominent here that you will definitely see once the rail cars are designed, which is there'll be a dynamic map. The place where you normally see now a paper map would be a screen. There would also be a map above the metro sign where you have currently priority seating. There's a glass metro sign above it. We're planning to put some type of passenger communication system so passengers know where they are and what station is coming up. I think currently in the 7000 series, you have it at the valance, which is not always viewable to everybody. So we're making that effort and creating different places where passengers can see and able to get information. And also there is additional screens that could be used to communicate with passengers, either to display advertisements or just other general information. In addition, I think the AEC had made a request a couple of years ago to make sure there is more signage. So we have put a requirement for accessibility signage on the floor where you port normally would put wheelchairs. So you would see that on the 8000 series rail cars. So it just kind of basically gives that depiction of their interior design. But please note, there will be plenty of opportunity to actually recreate this per our requirement and share it with stakeholders so we can get feedback and comments when the design process starts.
That's great, thank you. One quick one, while you have that picture up.
Yes.
One thing we've requested forever is that the priority seating be where the map is rather than where the emergency door opening is. And so it would just be a question of switching them back and forth just so that we don't have the people sitting where people are going to stand on them to get to the emergency door opening.
Okay, yeah, I think that was noted, but I think we haven't figured out a solution yet. But as we go through this process of meeting with you and the committee and our design team, we'll definitely look into that to see what solution we can bring forth that's acceptable to everybody.
Super, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, transitioning to slide number 13. Again, another angle of the interior design, which basically shows where the screens are. You can see the door and the seats where we normally consider priority seating. And above it, there's an advertisement screen. Very rudimentary. This is definitely not how the car is going to look, but this is our attempt to create just an image to share with everybody. So I just don't want people to think this is the opportunity to comment and give feedback. We're not there yet, but I just want to have people to have an idea how things are going to be laid out. But okay. All right, transitioning to slide 14. Basically, this is a depiction how the power outlets could look like. By far, we still don't have the position identified, where they're going to be, whether they're going to be on the wall, by the seats. So this is just an example. We just put a picture currently. This is actually an Amtrak train that have their outlet plugs on the wall next to the seat as an example. But we're definitely going to have a power outlets for passengers, but we're still not sure where it's going to be. So that has to be looked at a later time. This slide kind of shows, at least attempts to show repositioning of the grab handle. So there's been numerous requests. The way the grab hands are currently positioned lay themselves to be not efficient for everybody to use them, especially on a crowded train. So this is our attempt to kind of show we could reposition the grab handle slightly without changing the configuration of the interior too much to look different from the 7K. Because as we know, everybody loves the 7K, the way they look inside and the way the space is laid out and everything else. Without making any significant change, we'll try to address that issue. So this picture kind of shows very slightly minimal. You can't even tell visually what the difference is, but we will consider repositioning some of the grab handles so people can use them. All right. Slide number 16 shows some positions of security cameras. There's been additional requests for additional security cameras on the new fleet. So we're putting new cameras. So there'll be more than what we currently have. And they'll be positioned throughout the train. So every angle and all the positions are viewable through this camera system. So this is part of our Metro Transit Police request. So you will notice most probably there's going to be more cameras on the new cars.
Will there be external cameras as well as internal?
Yes, there will be an external cameras, but the external cameras is primarily for operation. It's for the operator to have visual access of the doors and the platform.
Well, exactly. That's why I asked. Thank you.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And obviously there's also external cameras for operational purposes that's going to be in front of the trains and also in the back of the train. So there is incidents and situations we'll have a visual record of what took place as well. So that this depiction shows both A car and B car and how the cameras will be laid out. It's very early stage and rudimentary depiction, but we'll have more clarity as we go through the design process. All right, and slide number 17 shows again how potentially the 8000 series rail cars will look from exterior design standpoint. I wouldn't bet on this is how the car was gonna look, is gonna look like. But nonetheless, this is our attempt to kind of give the car builder an idea what to consider as they design the exterior and car body of the rail car. The one obvious and prominent thing, at least here, is all the lighting system, whether it's inside or outside the car, will be LEDs. So they will have a little bit of a modern feel to them and in comparison to our legacy fleet. And the last slide, or slide number 18, kind of gives a cross-sectional view of the interior cars with all the screens and the signs. Basically, whatever I went through earlier, just kind of gives you a cross-sectional view of the rail cars. I'm not sure if there's anything new I can describe here, but let me know if you guys have any questions. And this is the last slide, so I'm willing to entertain any questions from the committee.
Let's see if we can, the general manager has arrived.
Okay.
And if you're willing to wait for his presentation and let everybody think about what their questions are and ask you questions, is that okay with you?
Absolutely, not a problem.
Okay, that's super. Thank you so much. Done a great job. I think you described those slides really well, and I apologize for interrupting.
No, not a problem at all. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Wiedefeld, you're here.
Hi, Phil. How are you, sir?
Oh, super. Did you bring the mayor?
I just got off the phone with her.
The floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you for your patience. And yes, that was an excellent presentation. I came in very early, and I want to thank obviously the committee for the input you've given us to date. But as was repeated several times, this is still a process, and we need your further input. So we look forward to that. I will be fairly brief, Phil. I really wanted to see if there's anything on you or obviously the committee's mind that you would like me to discuss. But the big news is besides 8,000, of course, but is the budget. And as you know, it's been a terrible year, you know, at so many levels. But from a budgetary perspective, it's been a roller coaster. There's just no doubt about it. You know, we were facing the potential of some significant cuts in early fall. The CARES Act came through for us. And then in December, we were all sort of, you know, on our pins and needles, whether the president was going to then sign the bill that was passed. He did in December. So that gave us some breathing room. And unfortunately, didn't cover us all the way through fiscal year 22, which begins July 1 for us. And then President Biden and the recent bill that was just passed, obviously, basically saved the day for us, to be frank, for 22. So we're in real good shape for 22. Our ridership continues to remain very low. Our rail ridership is down roughly 85% today, and our bus ridership is down about 60%. We're currently, and will in the future for 22, basically operate the rail system at roughly 80% pre-COVID, moving 15% of what we move, but with 80% of the service available. And then on the bus, running 85%. And we're doing a number of improvements on the bus as we're monitoring usage. We're adding more late night service. We're getting prepared for potential, across the board school openings and things of that sort. So just as we've had to be flexible over the last, several months, we'll have to remain flexible going forward. But all the terrible cuts that unfortunately we had to take out to public hearing, just because at that time we couldn't assume that these things would play out the way they did. They will not be occurring. So there'll be no trains, no stations closing. There'll be continuing the service that we're providing today. So there won't be further reductions in service. There won't be layoffs. We are, if you recall, in our proposed budget at the time, we were estimating at roughly 2,500. Potential position reductions. We don't have to do that. So all that is good news. It positions us very well, I think, for the future. I think like everyone else, we're all watching and hoping that things start to fall the way we all want it to fall. But just in Bob McCartney's article today, there's some issues that are right now that we have to keep an eye on with some of the variants and things like that. So, again, very positive for the future, but we want to be very cautious as well. So with that, I'll be glad to take any questions or comments. I won't go into 8,000 because you had that great presentation. That was obviously the other big news. So Phil, be glad to take any questions or comments you might have.
Well, that's super. I'll throw it open to the group. One thing you might do is tell everybody what you told us on the board, all the great things you're doing on the current system, like the UV light testing and the safety, because that's one of the major concerns, I think, for getting the ridership up. And the more we tell our group and the RAC on Wednesday, the more we can tell all of the people out in the community so they can have their injections and they can feel free that getting on the trains are safe. And so hearing it from you is a good thing rather than hearing it indirectly from me.
Yeah, no, there's a number of things we're doing. To make sure everything's safe. So we're doing deep cleaning throughout the whole system, whether it's bus, whether it's the rail system, whether it's rail cars, whether it's the stations. So we're doing that just as the normal course of building. We've stepped that up dramatically. But then if we get any reports, if we have someone that has reported a case, if we have an employee that reported a case, then we go in again, no matter where it is, whether it's a back office space or a public space. So we go and do that. We're doing some different testing of technology for cleaning and for identifying areas that need to be cleaned. So some of that is, again, in the testing stage, but we'll continue to do that. We've also taken advantage of the reduced ridership. So there are a lot of things that we're doing where we're advancing as much as we can on the capital program on preventive maintenance that, again, have longer term benefits to us. And the pain that they bring if we were in normal service isn't felt because the numbers are so low. So we want to continue that as well to try to knock down as many things as we can while the ridership is low, that those things that impact customers. So we've been very aggressive there. We have our capital program is probably the largest it's ever been, I believe, in the history of the agency, because we're knocking down a lot of those state of good repair things that need to be done, and we'll continue to do that. In terms of, you know, when you just think about the future, you know, our goal is to stay ahead of the demand, but, you know, recognizing that we need people to feel safe, whether it's through social distancing, whether it's through cleaning, all those things we want to do. But we've also done quite a bit of focus groups and surveys where we've reached out to the public to see what is their issues. And generally it's as much the vaccine, I mean, to be frank, I think as the vaccine, you know, gets all the way through the community, then their attitude starts to change. We've already seen it a little bit. I mean, in other things in the community, you've seen some different activities where people start to behave a little different. But on the rail side, on the bus side, I think there's that added sort of obstacle, you know, where you are getting in a closed environment with people you don't know. So that's a concern. So we, like aviation, you know, are a little bit further behind potentially, but I'm very positive about the future as well.
That's super. And I'm looking for hands. If we have any questions, do you see any hands up?
At this point, Dr. Pazra, I do not see any hands up by the members. I do have a member of the public.
Oh, okay. Paul, would you take a question from the public?
Sure.
Okay, Mr. Torres, go ahead.
Mr. Torres, you need to unmute yourself.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Yes. Good evening, Mr. Wiedefeld. Mr. Wiedefeld, I have real concerns about the way things are going on at WMATA concerning your leadership on disability matters. I get a sense in the way you talk to us when you come to these meetings, as though you're sort of talking at us, but you're not really talking with us. Because again, as I mentioned in the last meeting, I haven't heard you mention Metro Access yet. And basically, I think leadership on these issues is very important. Leadership from the top is very important, because it affects the way the people below you deal with the issue. For example, we have a situation with procurement where the procurement folks are ordering vehicles for us that are hurting us, I know disabled people now who will not ride on Metro Access vans because of the pain that it caused them. I personally have experienced pain in my back as a result of the service, as a result of some of those vehicles. I've even had drivers tell me that those vans hurt them. Why today, in 2021, you have a situation where disabled people have to hop over straps to seat themselves on a vehicle because the straps are being used to hold down a wheelchair? I don't know if you've ever ridden one of these vans that are used to transport disabled people, but I strongly suggest that you and the executives and the procurement people, especially who order these vehicles, they need to ride on those vehicles, because I guarantee you, if they had to use those vehicles daily to go to work, I guarantee you those vehicles would not be like that. And I think something needs to be done. There's a whole slew of vehicles that are going to be purchased. I don't know what we're going to be getting. The committee has made recommendations to WMATA to accommodate persons with disabilities. And those recommendations are basically cast aside. The last batch of sedans that were ordered We requested specifically from this committee a 90-degree opening. I don't need a 90-degree door opening, but my friend who I might want to ride with may need it because of their disability. They need a lot of free angling in order to get into those vehicles. Specification, the ADA specifications for vans, not sedans, but for vans, says that you need that. But that was requested and it was thrown out by WMATA. And there's documentation on February 26th of last year that documents this. I am very frustrated. I am very, very frustrated with this. And I urge you, sir, to do something about this. I believe WMATA needs to have total reform and reboot of disability services, because I feel that it is making little bits of progress here and there, but overall, it is an inferior system. It's a mediocre system, and it can do better because there's a lot of money. There's a lot of money that is being spent on the service.
I think you've made your point.
Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. I believe and I know that Metro Access and serving the disability community is always on my mind. I know that we have a team in place that is top notch, starting with Mr. Blake and Mr. Leader. And I know that you've met a number of our leadership at a number of your committee meetings, and they are very engaged and very committed to doing the best they can. So I have a different point of view with that. I'm very proud of what we've done. Can we do better? Of course we can. But I think we have a very good system. We look to you for ideas to improve it, and we will work with you as we've done in the past. Sometimes we can't get to the same place for lots of reasons, but that does not mean that we don't listen, we don't care. So I just have a little different point of view with that. But so thank you, Phil.
Yeah, I would also add to that, when we have had problems, we've always dealt with them as lessons learned, and we've had very good response, and things do get better. So we've had a good relationship. I see Tino is up next, and then Patrick is up after Tino.
Chair Posner, if I may, this is Anu.
Yes.
Steve Kaplan, Tino, and then Patrick.
Okay, go ahead. You're in charge.
Steve, go ahead, please.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Hi, Paul. I live in the Northwest area between DuPont Circle and Georgetown and Adams Morgan. And at this point, I've been on the committee enough years that people get to know me. And I've gotten a lot of input from people as I take my own buses and as I walk in the area. And let me just generalize. Mm-hmm. Many people, and particularly seniors, are having difficulty getting their concerns into, let's say, line management using customer service. The only means right now is by website. And the response from the website is almost immediate. Within 5 minutes, you get a response saying, thank you for your input. However, what follows, if there is a follow-up, is, and I've seen it myself, but other people have shown me what they get, is not, doesn't indicate a review or at least a consideration of the item. Let me give you one brief example, because we've got other people too. There's been a lot of concern by seniors who live at DuPont Circle, where many of them are concentrated, that the 42 bus has been curtailed because of the startup of what doesn't seem to make sense for many of them, which is an express bus service, the 43, which used to run just Monday through Friday on rush hours. And now beginning in August, and nobody can understand why, because it's an extra cost, is now running 7 days a week, day and night. And that bus bypasses DuPont Circle. A number of the seniors have told me they have raised concerns. And in fact, In fact, Congresswoman Pinto herself had one of her individuals try to go through the system, and they took, and I got a response that the only way he could go through was through customer service. And the response to him, which he showed me, was not a, was merely a bus schedule. So that's just one issue, you know, in my opinion, it's real, the 43 right now, given the fact that that things have changed since the study was done 3 years ago, really shouldn't be running almost at all. We don't need a rush hour anymore into town. But the real concern is customer service. Whether you consider an ombudsman for bus, or let's say a department that specializes in customer service just for bus, I think it would be helpful for you and you and others to take a look at that and provide specific service to bus passengers. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
That's a good point, Steve. You know, with the bus transformation effort, I think that's definitely something that we should consider, you know, particularly, again, because, the nature of bus with, literally the thousands of opportunities, for things, either whether it's a bus stop or a route or, the traffic, so many things can go, not the way that we plan. And so we have to be more responsive for that, for sure.
And Paul, the other thing with that is not just concerns, not just issues, but recommendations.
Sure.
Bus stop usage changes over the decades.
Right.
Needs change over the decades, and the public may be best equipped to provide these recommendations if they have more of a direct line to do so.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Tino, I think, is next to new.
Yes.
Tino, please.
Yes, Mr. Wiedewelt. Thanks for coming.
Sure.
I'd like to take a different tangent and say thank you. I would like to mention that back in October for the budget hearing then, I did take the survey about bus lines and train lines, but I also took advantage of the opportunity to speak as a member of the public, and I asked for consideration by WMATA for the installation of ultraviolet C germicidal filtration systems. At the time in October, we were still in the height of one of the surges. Mm-hmm. Well, now I'd like to say that in the March budget hearing, I again took the privilege of speaking as a member of the public to thank WMATA for beginning to test the UVC germicidal systems. As you know, we're all looking for more ways to not only feel safe, but to assure riders that they will be safe. And with respect to the COVID-19 or any future virus, the germicidal filtration systems will do the job. And so I thank you for that. And we on the advisory committee will do what we can to convince the members that we try and represent, people with disabilities and seniors, that with such things set like the germicidal filtration systems, they'll be much, much safer. And I hope that will help bring more ridership. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. And I will add that not only the work that you see that we're testing, but also we are monitoring internationally, what is going on, what people are doing around the world. Obviously, we're doing it locally with the American Public Transit Association. So even though we may not be doing an individual study, we are looking at others. And Teresa Imposato, who I'm sure you've met, our safety officer, constantly monitoring, what is it, what's next out there that maybe would work for us. So just so you know, it's broader than just the pilot program that we have underway.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Super. And Patrick, I think, is our last questioner.
Actually, Patrick and then Paul Semaphore.
Somehow I didn't think I'd be the last. Thank you. This is Pat Sheehan. Paul, it's good to hear your voice again. And I also would like to thank you for the work that you're doing and the support that you're giving this committee. I appreciate that. I also want to say that it's great work that you're taking the time to spend money on the capital projects to keep the system up. It wasn't that many years ago that we had all kinds of shutdowns and difficulties with stations that were needed a lot of work and upkeep. So it's great. I hadn't really thought that so much work would be done on the capital side, but I think that's great. There are several projects that, you know, I have appreciated, and I think this committee has appreciated over the years that you have supported. One is the lighting project. I know that Barbara Millville is here and she's been spearheading a lot of that project for us. And I know that project is coming along great, and we appreciate the funding that that project has received, and it's made the place safer for all. With respect to Metro Access, I know that we're going to have an upcoming RFP. One of the areas that we are very interested in, at least I am, is dealing with real-time data transmission, very much like what we would get with Uber and Lyft, so that we know when the vehicle is going to be there. Not quite sure that I would want to tie my GPS systems to Trapeze, but I'm fortunately not in the procurement business at WMATA, so I don't have to worry about that. But the functionality of that would really help to improve the system, I think, quite a bit. And then if we ever get back to a time where we have the ability to have an abilities ride type program, that was just launching when COVID hit. And I think that program was very successful. Now, of course, with much less ridership, 97% on-time performance because of the low ridership. I know that it's not needed, but I hope that we can bring that back. And then lastly, with the 8,000 series, I know we had issues with the 7,000 series and the between car door barriers. So in looking at the 8,000 series, hopefully we'll get a chance to look at a mock-up car that we can walk through, look at what our recommendations, see if we've missed anything that we can improve with the 8,000 series cars. The between car door barriers would be important, particularly for us visually impaired people. And I would say that, what was it, Phil? 18 out of 20 recommendations were taken with the 7,000 series. And I think we have a large percentage of the recommendations taken and already implemented with the 8,000 series. So I think that speaks a lot to the fact that you do listen to us and that the recommendations that we make do have an effect, and I appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Patrick. And again, it's been a pleasure to work with you over the years that I've been here. And obviously your commitment, you know, to continue to work on the committee is appreciated, I'm sure, by all. So thank you.
Paul Semaphore, are you on there?
Can you hear me?
I can see you and I can hear you.
Okay, good. So my thank you, Mr. Wilford, for coming to our meeting. So I would reiterate the two points that Patrick has made as the chair of the Metro Access Committee, that hopefully at some point when it is some financially feasible and the numbers do bear it out, we do have some form of abilities where I come back. And we do at some point when this RFP comes along, proposal that we get some real-time data on our Metro Access vehicles. Like I've said, I do ride the one in New York City and do currently get that. And it is a powerful thing. Information is powerful, and it allows us to make important transportation decisions during our own, paratransit trips, what to do next when we have that type of information. So hopefully WMATA will have that in place at some point in the future with Metro Access. So my main question is, with this changes in budgets and monies coming in from, and I just want to be clear about it, from our current president, our prior president, so the Metro Access service area and hours and all that will still be maintained as is, if I'm correct, through this current fiscal year and through 21-22. I just want to get, you know, clarification for the record for that.
Yes, sir. It will be. It will be. There are no cuts. I mean, or I'm recommending to the board, there's no cuts. I'm assuming the board is going to do that as well at our budget, the budget in April. But yes, all the things that were laid out that we had on 4G layout in December and January are not occurring.
Okay, so just right now through 21 through 22 fiscal year.
Through fiscal year. So that will be July of or June 30th of 22.
Okay, I just want to make sure that is clear for the record. If there are any changes, as I said, no, there won't be. But if there are changes, we as customers would like to be informed of any service changes as soon as possible so we can make appropriate adjustments.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anu. We had one more person, I think. Anu, you're muted.
How could I? Doris has her hand up. Doris, go ahead and there you go.
This is Doris Ray.
Hi, this is Doris Ray, and I live in Northern Virginia in Fairfax County, and I'm one of the designated appointees from the TPB Access for All Committee. And first, I want to express, as others have, appreciation for your leadership with WMATA in making sure that people with disabilities, especially those using Metro Access, have had the flexibility to get to where they need to go, and particularly for testing and to vaccination sites and helping those of us out who live in Northern Virginia, for example, who have kind of been stranded by the lack of bus service, getting to places because of reductions in bus service and the platform construction projects and all of that. It's helped very much that people with disabilities are able to use the Metro Access service. So we really appreciate all of that. I'm wondering, because I'm a daily bus user, particularly in non-COVID times, I want to advocate that when the bus transformation project picks up on its goals and WMATA is able to look at the at bus service, that we make sure to include and continue to have long line service through the Maryland and DC suburbs that allow people to get quickly from one place to another and then to connect to more local service. And, you know, that's really important. For example, when you live where I do on the eastern portion of Fairfax County and need to get up to George Mason University or the county government center, and when bus tends to be the most reliable basic service and provides the most economic equity for people of low income and marginalized populations, I think it's very important to for us to relook at and support that bus service. And then I have a question for you, and if you've answered it previously, forgive me for asking it again, hopefully in a different way. I know we're news reports say that the turnover of the Silver Line Phase 2 is about to happen, and it'll be in the position it'll be in the possession of WMATA, and will soon open. And I'm wondering about what work is going on now to connect those newer stations with bus service into the communities up there, because the communities in Herndon, for example, or out in the Loudoun County Extension will rely on bus service to, number one, just get people there and fulfill meeting the demand that we need to pay for that Silver Line and its operation, and two, just for people to get around and convert to bus and rail service. So I'm just wondering if there are plans underway and what you're doing in relationship to that.
Thank you, Doris. Yes, we're working with the, obviously with Fairfax County and with particularly Fairfax County, Loudoun County, on that, you know, that last mile or whatever it might be, you know, the connection to the rail station. It is in everyone's interest to make those connections work as smoothly as possible, because as you just mentioned, I mean, that's what's going to drive ridership. So I think as the project gets much closer in time, I think you'll see that pick up quite a bit. Right now, the Airports Authority, who's running the project, their intention is to have it at a point in September that basically it moves into, starts to move into our process, hopefully with the startup in early 22. But if you've been following any of the issues there, there still are a number of outstanding issues that need to be solved. We need to understand the root cause of some of the issues. And these are issues that have potential safety concerns. There's other issues that have maintenance and, you know, concerns like that. That's, you know, that's a different issue. That's, you know, a potential financial issue going forward. But the key for us before we can start service is it has to be safe. So until those are addressed and fully understood, that's why we can't give an exact date of starting up. But that then drives a lot of the work that we've done for the connections. So we will do that as this thing gets a little closer. But you're right on the mark, is that the success of that is dependent upon getting people to those stations, particularly as you get further out, you know, in the region. It's just, you know, just by definition, you know, the densities are different and you need that connection. So we're looking forward to working with everyone on that. And I think it's all, I really do think it's very important. And I'll make sure that if we haven't, or that we come back with the bus transformation study to this committee, because that will start to drive a lot of those decisions. So we need to make sure we're hearing from everyone on what types of improvements need to be made on the bus system to support not only just pure bus, but bus to rail, rail to bus, and all those connections. So thank you very much for your question.
I just wanted to ask one thing. Will Loudoun come into the WMATA compact and begin paying operating subsidies?
As the service starts, they actually are paying some on the, not on the operating yet, because we're not operating there. They are starting to pay some on the capital, because there's a lead time to basically start up the service. And so they'll be starting to kick in some dollars there, but the pure operating subsidy will be when the service starts to begin, right before then, because we have to go hire people and things like that. That'll be an operating budget, but it will be in the very near future, we all hope. Not from the money side, but because the service is coming.
Super, thank you. We have one last question from Tino again, and then we'll let Mr. Wiedelfeld listen to us ask some more questions of the 8,000 series group.
I'm glad Doris brought up the idea of buses, because I forgot to mention that should the germicidal ventilators prove effective in trains, let's keep in mind that maybe they should be put into buses as well. Buses tend to be, or at least feel, more crowded and therefore insecure. The last thing is with respect to budget. In the rescue package of the Biden administration last year, there was some monies that could be used for operation, federal monies. Now there's the proposed $2 trillion $300 million or billion. We might expect perhaps up to $80 million for transit. If we get any of it, is it possible that, again, we can use some of that federal money for operations?
It's not clear yet, to be frank. I mean, you know, that's got a few more turns to be made in that. So as that comes clearer, we will know. But it seems to be much more focused on pure infrastructure and not operating side of the house. But, you know, I think that's, as we'll monitor it, we'll try to position ourselves as best we can, you know, with that. Clearly, there's basic infrastructure needs. Our number one priority on the federal side for infrastructure is the PREA funding. That's a unique set of dollars that we get. And we've built the capital program around that. It gives us the chance to, again, not only to catch up on state of good repair, but then maintain a state of good repair. So that is our first priority. But if there's additional new dollars beyond that, there are, you know, as you know, we have many other needs across the system, literally across the entire system that we were going to do. So we will keep a very close eye on that. But it's just too early right now to know what that will come out the other end for that process.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, super, thank you. You have answered everybody's questions. You've done a great job as always. I will just leave you with one last thing to remember. My request at the last board meeting was we're going to have a big discussion in 2 weeks about flat fare for Metro Access. And so just to put that on your radar, that we'll try to give you some interim numbers. And of course, you can have your professionals look at the real numbers.
Sure.
And see if we can do that. But thank you so much for coming. And
thank you, Phil. I apologize. I have a 7 o'clock, but thank you for giving me the time to be here.
Well, anytime you want, you know, you have an open door.
Thank you, Phil. All right. And thanks everyone on the whole committee. And I really do want to thank our staff. They do a great job across the board, obviously supporting the committee. You know, I really think Christian is one of the tops in the industry, so we're very fortunate to have him. Thank you so much.
Thank you. He works well with us, and the 8,000 crew today have been great. We feel a little bit safer.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Devesay, are you still with us and ready to have some questions?
I'm here and awake.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, I think we may have worn out all of our questioners, but I'll ask anyone that has an additional question to raise their hand, and we'll move forward. Again, be aware it's 5 minutes to 7, so keep your questions brief and to the point.
Okay, so I have Steve Caffin, and then we have Patrick Sheehan so far.
Okay, I'll make this very brief. In fact, three sentences and just a comment. I notice in the mock-up of the car, there are no poles. And while we would like everybody to move to the center of the car, and we've heard that announcement for 15 years, we know that's not the case, and it's not going to be the case during rush hour. So you need to take account of that and build something in, whether they're hanging poles, which we've had a discussion about, or whether they're just normal poles. The other thing is those bars all the way at the top, the horizontal bars that are going to be like holding bars or strap hangers, they seem awfully high, and I wonder whether many people will be able to reach them. So you might want to consider that. The other thing, the seats are curving, and that's fine, but not everybody's back is the way it is. I'm not an expert in this area, but I saw the curved seats going outward, and I just wondered if you were going to take a further look at the configuration before you finalize it. And okay, I think, the plugs. You know, be careful where you put the plugs, because if people start using wires, the in and out into a unit, the in and out is going to be quite complex. They probably need to be built right into the seats because of the wiring. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
So just to provide feedback, I think most of it was a comment for us to consider as we design the cars. But the biggest caveat in my presentation is please do not take anything in this rendering as real life, because the artists took the liberty to mostly beautify the way the interior would look. So from practical standpoint, yes, we will consider the comfort of passengers and how the reality is gonna come out before we actually approve a final design. So every comment you made, we've taken into consideration to make sure it will be addressed as part of that process. Also the plugs, from safety standpoint, we're very mindful. We have to position them in a place where they're accessible, but also they cannot be played with, manipulated, and everything else. And the grab handle are definitely are going to be a hot topic once we design the cars, because there's a lot of things that goes into it. Meaning, there are a lot of tall people, so are they going to have issue with that? And there are people who can't really reach. How can we have them available? So all that will be taken into consideration, but thank you for your comments.
I'll point out for the future questioners that we're going to have lots of time between now and the several design phases to make minor changes in what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm very optimistic, even to the point of the mock-ups. I did have a question about the mock-ups, because last time we had the wooden mock-up and we went through it and it looked great. We made our comments. And then when the final car came in, it looked nothing like the mock-up. And I wonder whether we will get a look at that first pilot car when there's still some time to make some adaptations to the seating.
You're gonna have even more opportunity than that. In the 8K, those wooden mock-ups are what we call soft mock-ups. Right. So that's also as in the 7K, but we've added in the 8K a hard mockup, which is once we agree on the soft mockup, that means there's going to be a more real life size mockup that translates from the soft mockup. Then you have a real visual understanding how the car's going to look like, which gives us another step to address issues and problems before we even get to the pilot car. So yes. Yeah.
That's super. Thank you. And then who is next?
That would be Patrick Sheehan.
Thank you. Phil, you took one of my questions. Let's see, one question that I had was the between car door barriers. I don't know if in the hard mock-up, which I think is a great idea, whether we would be able to see what device you have between the cars, so that someone who is visually impaired like myself wouldn't think they're walking into the car when they're actually walking between cars and could fall onto the tracks. That was a problem with the 7000 series. So I'm hoping we can take a look at that. The two other areas were the something that we dealt with the 7000 series, which hopefully is good in the 8000, is how slippery is the floor? I think, what do you have, Phil, slippage coefficient or something that you always talk about? And then thirdly, something that's critical for me is automatic announcements as we go through the different trains and the quality of the audio coming out of the system. Maybe you could comment on those three things.
Thank you very much for your comment. And inner car barriers are a very hot topic for many reasons. One primarily being of the incident that happened that you mentioned. So we're very sensitive to making sure that's addressed. So one reason, the fact that I did not have that in my slide is we've completely changed our requirement in the 8K. So all those issues the 7K had faced, and even after solutions were proposed, there were still operational challenges based on those implementations of some of the solutions. We've completely revamped our requirements. So sometimes requirements do not translate into design. So we are in close proximity with the 7K team that are doing a different design testing. So we have our ears to that to see if that solution is could be applied to the 8K. And obviously the committee will have an opportunity to review that and be preview to that solution once it comes to fruition. So we're hoping maybe that could translate into the 8K requirement. If that doesn't happen, then we have to design our own requirement as well. So if it comes to that point where we are ahead of the 7K solution, we'll also present our own solution to the committee. But yes, we're very sensitive to the intercar barrier design process and what it means to riders and to this committee. So we'll be mindful and make sure that's part of the conversation every time we meet.
Super, thank you.
Yeah.
I have
Phil, the other two, the audio is in good shape and the floor slippage.
Yeah, so the audio announcement, we're definitely, there's an opportunity to make improvements. As I said, the 7K, they're outdated for many reasons, mostly being time since they were originally designed, but they also, there's an opportunity to improve that as well. But from the 8K standpoint, yes, our passenger information system will be the latest and greatest, at least from time standpoint. So we are going to take that into consideration when we incorporate the technologies. And also from clarity and from the type of voice that's going to come out, the system has really changed. So I think it will be very clear once we go through that process the next couple of years. The floor material, we have looked at the coefficient of friction, as we call it, their specific requirement that was in the 7K. From the 8K standpoint, what we've done is we've incorporated some testing requirement to make sure we test the floors on dry and wet condition. We go through that design process as well. So we will address that problem once that design process starts. But yes, that's also addressed in the 8K.
Excellent, great. Yeah, Thank you, sir.
We're a little short on time and we had two more people a question. I'm gonna ask them if they can email their questions to Anu, and then we'll forward them to Mr. Devesay and see if we can get the answers by email. While you talked about the coefficient of slippage, I will point out the problem with the 7000 was it was perfect until the cleaning crews came in and washed out all of the rough materials. And so the new cars worked fine. And after about 6 months, the maintenance crews were using so much disinfectant and washing and keeping them so clean that they became slippery. So it wasn't the initial slippage, it was what you can do with the high maintenance that they were doing on it. But if the last two questioners are willing to do that by email and you're willing to take their emails and respond to them, that would be super. And we can let you go out to enjoy the rest of the evening and we won't have to run over.
Okay. Thank you for the committee and the chairman. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You've been terrific. This is the best interaction we have had with the design group in all the years I've been involved with WMATA. So thank you so much.
Okay, you're most welcome.
Anu, we're on to our next item.
Yes, sir. And that would be the public comments. And we do have a member of the public who would like to make some comments, Mr. Ansel Torres. Go ahead and make your comments now.
Yes, I want to address some things that were said earlier on, and I'll be as brief as I can be. Regarding the issue of web consultants and the Columbia Lighthouse, my brief comment on that is now I understand the WMATA website. That's all I'm going to say. And this is coming from someone who worked on the inside at Columbia Lighthouse at one time in its heyday. Regarding the procurement of new technology, I have some concerns about the GPS technology that we are being promised. And the reason why is because it appears that every time Metro Access attempts to get new technology, there always seems to be something that prevents it from happening. For some reason, it gets curtailed and it doesn't happen. Starting with the beacon system with the Columbia Lighthouse, moving up to the 10-minute notification before your trip arrives technology. So many cities in the United States already have GPS technology, including New York and Boston and other places. And we who crown ourselves the leaders of prior transit, we can't do it yet. The folks who use bus rail, they have GPS technology that tells them when their trips arrive. We are not being served well by whoever the procurement people are in these technologies. And I keep hearing about trapeze. And if I hear trapeze one more time getting in the way of good access for us at Metro Access, I am going to scream, because it seems as though everything is tethered to trapeze. And so we can't go forward because trapeze is now an albatross around the neck of disabled people who use paratransit. Returning to the issue of paying on the sidewalk, I believe this is a form of disabled profiling, just like racial profiling, because I guarantee you, if there were Blacks or Hispanics or any minority group that was told, hey, you have to pay on the sidewalk because you people have a history of not paying your fare, there would be a fiery eruption in this country, the likes of which you have never seen. So why do we disabled people get profiled, and we have people who are supposed to be representing the disabled people, the disabled community, approving of this rubbish, approving of this policy? I condemn it, and anybody who supports it, well, I will stop there because my language may get out of control. I'm going to stop there on that topic. Next one. Audio surveillance. I believe that we in the disabled community, again, are being persecuted because audio devices are going to be installed in these vehicles. And because these vehicles are so small, you will be able to pick up just about everything that we say on the vehicle. Whereas people who take bus and rail, they can hide among, you know, the thousands of people who ride, and their privacy is not being violated in the same way. So audio on a huge train that can carry hundreds of people, and comparing that to a bus or a sedan, it's comparing apples and oranges. Thank you.
Thank you. Anu, I see Tino and Dora still have their hands up. Is that because they'd like to speak in public comment or because they forgot to take them down?
I believe this is from prior, but we can surely get that confirmation from them. We do have another member of the public, Marcy, who would like to make some comments. So before we go to the members, can we take Marcy's comments?
Yes, please.
Marcy, go ahead and unmute yourself and make your comments, please.
Okay, I don't know if I can answer this right now, but something to keep in the back of your head. On the new rail card, will they be able, when they do announcements, Did you captioning so that the people who are hard of hearing can know what's going on?
That's a very good question. And actually, one of the suggestions that we plan on making is with the new technology, if it is possible to have the announcements streamed either through listening devices or through cell phones so that people will be able to get the announcements. The problem we have with many of the announcements and many of the signs during rush hour is when people are standing and the car is crowded, you can't see them and you can't hear them because of the noise. And so one of the things we're asking is for the technology for headphones, as they do in movie theaters and Broadway shows. And so that's part of the ask and that's part of the development. So we can't promise anything now, but we are aware of that problem and we're hoping that WMATA and we can come up with some solutions. But that's a great question because it's a problem for everyone.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Tino, this is Anu. Did you have your hand up from prior section or would you like to make some comments at this point?
Well, just one comment on the point that was just mentioned. There's a possibility maybe we could use technology like hearing loops, but that remains to be examined. I thought at some point we have to deal with last month's minutes, but that's okay. I don't have to deal with it now.
No, we did them and we accepted them.
No, the bus rail, that's part. Bus rail.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tino. I did, that wasn't on the agenda, so I didn't remember them. So I'll take a minute right now and ask if everybody has an opportunity to read last month's bus rail minutes. And if there are any comments, suggestions, omissions, deletions, or additions, please raise your hand now, or if not heard, I will accept them as unanimous consent.
This is with respect to the AAC or the two subcommittees?
No, this is to bus rail, which you just requested.
Oh, well, should I make a couple of comments about the minutes?
Oh, well, no, only if you want to change them. If you're happy with the minutes that have been sent out and people have seen, otherwise we'll put it off until Monday.
Sure.
You just brought it up. You said you wanted to have last month's minutes approved.
Well, we usually do it at the meeting of the bus rail subcommittee. So
okay, well then never mind then.
Okay,
never mind.
We have not started the bus rail subcommittee report yet. And the approval can be done at the bus rail meeting next
right.
month.
I think he was talking, not necessarily approving the minutes, which actually occurs during the meeting. I think he was looking to give his report like he and Mr. Semaphore subcommittee.
Right, I thought he meant that they hadn't approved last month's minutes at last month's bus rail meeting, and so he wanted to have them approved at this meeting. But that's
okay.
We're back. What we had was a failure to communicate, and we will do it. Do we know if Doris has her hand up because she wants to speak or just forgot to take her hand down?
This I just got on because I wanted to say that it's just still up. I don't know if there's a way to shut it down in a circumstance like this on the telephone. So.
Oh, not to worry. Anu can turn
I know you
off.
Can mute and unmute, but I don't
no,
know.
She can also lower you can. Yeah, she can also lower your hand.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm done, Doris. Thank you.
It's down. So we're moving right along. And Tina, you're up for the bus rail subcommittee. And I think we may be a little bit late, but I think we'll make it.
And that you mean to
your report for bus rail subcommittee.
Yeah. Well, one of the most important things we did, it was at Doris's mentioning of it, strengthening the point. You know, for years, even before I came on, there was a whole discussion over and over again about the announcements. And so last month, it came up again, and people itemized what we've said the announcements ought to be. And Doris, thankfully, made a motion, and it was passed, that the kind of staging of the announcement that we've discussed, especially over the past year, be approved and sent on to the general manager and the board. We also discussed, let's see, I'm trying to find where the heck, we talked about, electronic messages in buses and trains. And Patrick mentioned that a little while earlier. He was going to help us determine what the best things are on the market. That was mentioned at the last meeting. Then we talked about the budget hearings, and basically that was what we covered. And people should review the draft, and we take them up and approve them at the bus rail subcommittee meeting next week.
That's super, Tino, and I'll just add that having received the agenda for Monday's meeting, that we are going to get a return on the announcements on rail. The announcements group are going to come back to speak to us. So we've had instant response, as we have on many things. So kudos to WMATA, another gold star.
So they're coming Monday?
They're coming Monday. They're on the agenda.
Okay.
That's great. Great.
Okay. Paul, you're up for Metro Access.
Oh, can you hear me? Okay.
I can hear you and see you.
All right, good. So we have so from the last meeting, let me pull up my minutes. So we have a fully packed agenda for this upcoming meeting. We're going to talk about, sedan update, just any brief updates, as also any questions we may have. Old business about the seatbelts we're going to talk about at this next meeting. Metro Access fleet seatbelts, an update on the GPS solicitation. We're going to also hear about safety and cleanliness, about the Metro Access audio and video recording, questions about that, and the discussion of flat fare versus fare calculator. We're all going to discuss a fully packed agenda. Those are the topics that we are going to discuss. And as a summary from the last meeting, let's see, just need to look at the notes here for a hot quick second. Ah, okay. So we, at the last Metro Access meeting, we talked about COVID-related cleaning and safety issues about the seats and things like that. And Mr. Blake will bring and have a further discussion with management and give us an update hopefully in the future. We talked about the Metro Access next generation van technical specifications and got an update on that. And we had a presentation on the Metro Access ride calculation. And it's to my understanding that there's still some questions and clarifications about that. So that will be also taken up at the next meeting. If Ms. Rush is on here, did you have anything else? We also discussed about on the vehicle about ventilation, and that management, Metro Access management, is looking into how that will happen for either the current vehicle and or any vehicles moving forward, and let us know of an update for that.
Yes, I'm on the line. This is Denise Rush. It's a little off the subject,
Is Kelly Simino on the line? Hello?
Ms. Rush, this is Anu. I do not see Kelly on the call today.
Okay, well, about 2 or 3 weeks ago on Channel 5, there was an article, a report about her. She had an app built that would assist you if you were handicapped, that you'd call. It notifies you of stations that have full service that you call and say, I'm handicapped, I need to get gas, it's difficult for me to get gas, and I'm on my way there, will you assist me? And give them your tag number and your name, and they come out and get the gas so she doesn't have to get out the car because it's difficult for her. And it was a great report, and I hope you all get to see it.
Yeah, actually, I have a link to that, which I'll put in the chat, so that if anybody wants to see it, they can. I'm copying it right now.
Oh, also the other piece we talked about at the meeting very briefly was, and that was done at the AAC, was we recapped about the OIG special report as it relates to Metro Access. So that was discussed, and the web booking password change in terms of how that has been successful, thanks to staff communicating it very clearly to customers that this change will go on, and how to do it, and where to go to basically eligibility staff if they need to resolve those issues. And there has not been any, barely any customers having any big complaints about that whole transition process of changing their passwords. Anything else? Any questions from AAC members as it relates to my reports and what's going to be on this month's fully packed agenda?
No, but I put the link in the chat to everyone with another copy to Anu in case she would like to send it out to everybody as part of an email.
Sure, I can definitely do that. And I see Doris has her hand up. Doris, did you have any comments?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Go ahead, Doris. Did you have any
comments? Yeah, I just had a hard time with mute and unmute. I'm sorry. Okay, I just wanted to ask under Metro Access Committee, whether soon we might start talking about what Metro Access service is going to look like crossing the border between Fairfax County.
Now, what I did mention that in my work plan, because I was very specific about that. I'm glad you mentioned that, Doris. So I did mention that I remembered in July is when I reviewed the work plan and Mr. Blake responded, began to respond about that. And I was holding off on that because obviously we have a pandemic. And now that I'm beginning to hear the Silver Line is about to come into, well, phase two come to fruition, I'd be more than happy to add that, not at this month's agenda, probably next month's agenda, the discussion of...
Sure. The other thing is, because, for example, we recently had a vaccination clinic out in Loudoun, and people weren't able to cross the border from this WMATA side. And the other thing I wanted to mention about the note on Kelly Simino is that a number of years, 10 or 15 years ago, in fact, what's now called the Disability Rights Law Center in Virginia, it was called the Office on Protection and Advocacy before, brought a lawsuit against all of the gas stations in Virginia, and actually require them to come up to come and help, even if you're in front of the gas station and you honk your horn. But what Kelly is talking about is a great idea that could be added to. I just want you to know that there's a judicial precedent that they are supposed to do that, at least in Virginia.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
I see Tina's hand up. Do you have a comment?
Just the point of clarification. For those of us who weren't able to ask questions of Nahum, we are to send the questions to Anu, right?
Yes, please.
So we're done with my report. There's no other questions. Is that correct? If not, I will mute myself. Thank you.
Thank you. And Tino, I think you got that. And Doris, the questions that you didn't get to ask, if you can send them to Anu, she will forward them, and then we will get a reply to everybody when it comes back. We're in good shape with the meeting. I'd like to thank everybody because we had a very full agenda. I think the questions that everybody asked the GM were excellent. I think the questions that we asked the 8,000 team were excellent. And I am very optimistic that we're going to get a lot of interaction with the design of the 8,000 series car. And it's going to be really good. I'm looking forward to, you know, being able to ride it as I was when the 7,000 came in. I think you guys are all doing a good car. Good job.
Posner, this is Annie. I just want to state this for the record. Albert Ariza Silva had emailed his question to be shared with the 8,000 series team. I will be including that in my email to Nahum Debussy for a response.
Thank you. I also noticed that Albert had in fact signed in on a call-in this month, which is nice because we have missed him. So I'm absolutely delighted to hear that. So let's take an opportunity to get 5 minutes of your life back and have a safe trip home. And hopefully we'll see you all on Monday.
Okay.
Take care.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great meeting, everybody.
Excellent meeting. Thank you.
Yes.
Stay safe. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
And have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Carol.